Hello, Packers fans. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. For guys, a red letter day in the Green Bay Packers organization for only the second time in nearly three decades, seemingly moving on to a new quarterback after Aaron Rodgers has made public his intentions to continue playing NFL football, but to do so for the New York Jets. Let's just jump right into this. Spoon, I'm going to start with you. I know the details of the trade have not yet been worked out. There is still a lot of logistics to handle here for this to go through and to be official with the league office. But you've been on this from the beginning, that this was possibly the Packers' intentions. Aaron Rodgers said that when he went into his darkness retreat, this was on the Pat McAfee show on Wednesday, that when he went into the darkness retreat, his plan was 90% to retire. And then he comes out, he sees that the narrative has shifted, that the Packers are possibly wanting to move on from him, and he sort of rethought what he wanted to do with his future. What did you take from what Rodgers had to say on the McAfee show today, and just, I guess, the big picture here of the Packers wanting to move on and this trade possibly happening soon?
Yeah, well, first, this was the Packers' intention all along. There wasn't really any probably to it. They made an organizational decision in probably February, maybe late January, that they were going to move on. And they were going to tell him they were going to move on. But they had already told him to go decide whether he wants to play. And I'm not surprised that it's ended up where it is. I think it was headed that way all along. I think the way the mechanics of how it worked probably wasn't very smooth, but this is what the Packers wanted, and not necessarily what Rodgers wanted, but I think he's going to land in a place where he's got a chance to do something, you know, pretty big. So I don't think it's a bad situation for either team. And it's definitely a good situation for Jordan Love.
And we are definitely going to get into the Jordan Love of it all before we finish this episode today. But let's stay with Rodgers for right now. Ryan, what was your take on everything he had to say about how Green Bay handled this? I don't even know what word I'm trying to look for here. Snarkuffle. That's the word I'm looking for.
Snarkuffle.
Oh. Yeah.
You really pulled back and got a good one there.
I may have made it up, but, you know, Shakespeare made up words all the time.
We're going to run with it. Yeah, the snarkuffle. So the thing to keep in mind, and this has always been my problem with the McAfee appearances, is that it's not – there's no pushback. It's one-sided. It's Aaron Rodgers' perspective, which really isn't journalism. It's Aaron Rodgers, how do you see this? And there's never just one perspective. So what we heard today was Aaron Rodgers' perspective. And I think we should take a moment just to point out that some of the things he said make no sense. The biggest thing that stood out to me in his perspective was that coming out of the darkness retreat, he sensed a change with the organization. He said something changed. I don't know what it was, but something changed. And he'd heard that they were shopping him around. First of all, he said on the McAfee show before the darkness retreat that he had heard that the Packers were shopping around. This was late January. And that he found it interesting. This is before he ever went into darkness. He said that he heard that he was being shopped, and then something changed after the darkness because he heard that he was being shopped. What was even more contradictory than that was when A.J. Hawk asked him if he'd be gung-ho about coming to the Packers in 2023 for 19th season. And he said not really, because he sensed during the season that the organization was ready to move on with Jordan Love. So something changed after the darkness retreat, except that it was apparently what he had been feeling since not just late January, but actually the season. So in terms of how the Packers handled the snarkuffle, it sounds like they were pretty consistent throughout the entire way. And it sounded like a bit of a false narrative that I heard. Things just didn't add up. They were very contradictory.
And important to remember, there's three sides to this story. Aaron Rodgers' side, Brian Gutekunst's side, and the truth, which I'm going to call Tom Silverstein's side. He'll find it out for us there. Did you get the sense from both of you? I'm going to ask both of you this question. Did you get the sense, maybe long before February, that this was on the horizon and that this team was ready to move on from Aaron Rodgers?
Well, just when I had heard for sure that Brian Gutekunst was telling people that they were ready to move on, that they were, and this was apparently he said this late last season. I didn't know how fast it would happen, but given the contract, I thought they would try to do whatever they could to get rid of him. But the big thing was that there was going to have to be an organizational decision to move on, which means not just Gutekunst, it meant Mark Murphy and Matt LaFleur were going to have to agree on it. And I think the reason Aaron Rodgers signed that massive contract a year ago was because there was organizational pushback on any thought of trading him. And so, you know, I don't know who, if any, had pushed back, but it was obvious that, you know, Murphy, and he's the has the final word on all of this. He approved the contract. So you just didn't know whether someone like Murphy was going to stand in there and say, no, we got to keep him. So it made me think that there was agreement.
Yeah, as the season went on, I internally, just myself, felt like this is the right time logically. Like he's a 39-year-old quarterback. He'll go into his age 40 season next year, who's never been worse. This is as bad as he's ever been. And part of that, sure, is not having Devontae Adams. But part of that is he wasn't playing well. And then you add on the injuries. 40-year-old quarterbacks don't just magically stop getting injured. That doesn't just go away. It usually gets worse. So from what we saw on the field, it made sense. I thought when Brian Gutekunst talked to us in December and he was asked point blank, do you want Aaron Rodgers back? He gave a very tepid endorsement for Aaron Rodgers being back. He basically said, yeah, but we want all our players back. He was in the middle of the season, wasn't going to rock the boat. And you just, if you were here 2 years ago, you remember them as an organization, Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur, literally begging the quarterback to return in 2021. And that this was different. This was not that. So going into the offseason, I thought, yeah, this is definitely going to happen. Then the people, and I've spoken with a good number of people, I know Spoon has too. Everything that I start hearing is that, you know, the Packers might organizationally have some doubts about moving on for a couple of reasons. One, it's important to keep in mind just how much of a grip hold Aaron Rodgers has had on this organization since the initial rift in the offseason of 2021. He is, you know, the joke around Green Bay, obviously, is that Aaron Rodgers owns the Bears. The Packers don't have an owner. Aaron Rodgers has owned the Packers. He has owned them to an extent that almost no NFL player ever reaches, from not just being the quarterback, but having such a stronghold with his influence within the organization. Doesn't have to do off-season workouts. Not a problem. You want us to trade for Randall Cobb, a sixth-round pick? Wouldn't want him, but okay, just to appease you, we'll do that. It was a complete reversal. They elevated him to such a role that overcoming that wasn't just going to happen. So those were the rumblings that I heard early in the offseason. And to Spoon's point, his timeline in February, it did start to change and shift. And there was more conversations of, okay, this is going to happen. So I was surprised at the beginning of the offseason not to hear it as strongly as I did. But by this point, it's not at all a surprise.
Ryan, you touched on this a little bit, but I just want to get a little bit more specific here. You both mentioned them wanting to move on. As you said, he's going to be 40 years old in December of this year while he's playing. But still a four-time MVP, two of those that have come in the past couple of years, three straight 13 and three seasons. Why were they ready to move on? Was it needing to get out from underneath the weight of his contract? Was it, you know, needing to wrestle back some control of the team that they had given to Rodgers? Was it just, you know, something that Rodgers mentioned on the McAfee show, wanting to move on a year early instead of a year too late? Why do you think they were ready to move on from Aaron Rodgers?
Yes.
All of that.
And then some.
Spoon, well, is that what you got too?
You have to throw Jordan Love in there too, because they've had a chance now for 3 years to determine whether he's good enough to lead the team and whether they need to move on to the next stage. I mean, we always mention the four MVPs with Rodgers, but no one mentions that they haven't won a Super Bowl since 2010. And so, you know, at some point you have to determine if a guy is declining. And I think what we saw last year was that he is. And injury or no injury, the thing that was really shocking was to see how many receivers running open he kept missing. And I think from the Packers standpoint, that's enough to do it. And, you know, and then you throw in the contract, like giving him that $58.3 million was going to absolutely kill them in future years. It was going to just destroy their cap when he retired. And so they didn't want to, you know, I think maybe they were willing to do that if he had played at an MVP level. But that, coupled with the fact that they saw some really good things from Jordan Love, you have to make these decisions. You know, at some point you have to make a decision on a guy who's 40 years old. And I think it was just all of those factors and nothing to do with how many MVPs he's won or the fact that he's going into the Hall of Fame or whatever. This is what happens in the NFL. You make decisions, and right or wrong, you know, you got to stand behind them.
Yeah, the year too late or year too early thing's really interesting, because when you really look at it, they're moving on a year too late. There's no question they're moving on. The right time to move on
was last year. Was last year at the time a year too early? Like, in hindsight, it's easy to go, okay, last year was the right time.
That's what we get to do, and that's why general managers get paid the big bucks. But if you look at history in retrospect, in hindsight, they're moving on a year too late. Last year, they would have gotten a boatload for a quarterback who was in decline. And that, to me, is the biggest reason why they're ready to move on. It's even bigger than Jordan Love. And from what I hear, there's a lot of confidence in Jordan Love. Brian Gutekunst said the same at the Combine, which was they feel like he is absolutely ready to play and he needs that opportunity. He's ready for it. But be a little different is if Aaron Rodgers is still winning MVPs. Because when you're winning MVPs, when you're at the top of the league, it's easy to hand over ownership of the team. And here, you have an outsized voice and influence. It's easy to make a player the highest paid in NFL history. But when Aaron Rodgers plays like he did last season, and that player still has that contract and that type of influence, that doesn't fly in this league. And so the product on the field is where it starts. And the haggling now, according to Aaron Rodgers, about compensation, that's tied to the product on the field too. If he was still at the top of his game, then it would be a much easier debate than a guy going into his age 40 season who just had the worst year of his career and went through three separate injuries on top of it.
With that in mind, the details of this trade have not been hammered out yet as of the time of this recording that we know of. You know, Aaron Rodgers said the decision was made last Friday. Now it's just a matter of the Packers and the Jets working out the details. What do you think is a fair compensation? What should the Packers be demanding? What should the Jets be offering? And where are they going to meet in the middle? Like, what's actually going to happen each of you have a number in your mind of what you think it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, if I were the Packers, I'd go for a second round pick this year and a conditional pick next year that could be as high as a first, depending on either play time or achievement for Rodgers. And then maybe one more pick, conditional pick, if he plays in 2024. So that maybe that's another first round pick. But I wouldn't absolutely dig my heels, as he, to use the term he did, on getting a first round pick this year, because I don't know if they're going to get it. And at some point, these two teams, they have a common interest in getting this done. The Packers need to get rid of that contract, and the Jets need a quarterback. So there may be some chicken being played for a while, but if they're smart, they just meet in the middle somewhere.
I don't think they're going to get a first-round pick. And this thought of demanding multiple first-round picks, it's just logical that they're not. They're not dumb.
Not for a guy who's 40 years old.
No, they're not demanding. That's just logic. I mean, it's just I don't think they're getting a first-round pick. Spoon, I'm curious. This could be such an interesting trade compensation, because I can't remember, and I'm sure I'm just not thinking, but I can't remember ever being conditional picks on whether a guy plays. I mean, the Favre trade was a conditional on whether or not the Jets made the playoffs, right? I mean, that was like, it was a first round pick, but it ended up being a third round pick because they missed the playoffs, and it was conditional on that. But I can't remember, like, if this guy keeps playing, we'll give you another pick. If not, it's going to be such a wonky thing.
Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, and part of the problem is that this contract that goes with him.
Yeah.
And who's going to, you know, that's part of the equation. It's a massive commitment to him. And, you know, if you want him to play for 2024, it's a massive commitment. So that's the part that makes it different from, you know, Russell Wilson or Matthew Stafford or whoever got traded at the time. One is the age. Two is the contract that goes with them. And, you know, three is just the circumstances. In the Russell Wilson deal, there was, you know, competition. And in the Rams for Stafford deal, it was, they expected him to play five or six more years. So I just think it's kind of different with him. I think,
you know,
it's like when the 49ers traded Joe Montana to Kansas City, they didn't get three first round picks for him.
You know, the original sin to me was not having the right timing in terms of year too early, year too late, and moving on and making the transition. But that contract, to double down and I mean that contract's such a problem. It's such an incredible albatross.
I just picture Brian Gutekunst like sitting in the room on the phone, and he's like, "I want a first, 2/3, and David Putney because I feel like it." It's a draft day reference there. If you haven't seen it,
it's a good movie. I dig it.
All that to say, when do you think this actually happens? When do you think that they get the details of this trade hammered out and the Packers kind of know what they're working with here?
That's anyone's guess.
It is currently March 15th. It's March, year of our Lord, 2023, just for reference for if you're listening to this later.
Well, so the Packers deadline is the first day before, or the day before the first day of the regular season. And
so September.
Yes. But their also deadline for them is the draft, the day of the draft, because if they wait beyond that, they don't get a pick this year. So I think the Packers have an artificial deadline of the draft, And the Jets probably have an artificial deadline of the first day of off-season workouts, which is like April 15th, 17th, something like that. To me, those are the deadlines they're working on. And so
those are both mid to late April. So do you think it could be 3 or 4 weeks before we hear
it? Yeah, it could. I don't think either side wants it to be that, but you never know with these things.
It's I think it's important to make note that Aaron Rodgers refuted the ESPN report that he sent a list of demanded free agent targets to the Jets. Now, if you believe that Aaron Rodgers was 90% leaning toward retirement going into the darkness retreat, I have Oceanside property to sell you in Kansas. So I don't know that, you know, just because he said it doesn't mean that it's the case, or it doesn't mean that he didn't strongly indicate that, you know, obviously the Jets went out and got Alan Lazard, but.
Yeah, he kept saying a demand list. I didn't have a demand list. And I think just kind of knowing how he uses his words, mm-hmm. the key there, I think he definitely had a wish list and handed them that. And then Lazard, OBJ, Randall Cobb, Mercedes Lewis, they were all on it.
The point is, and this is something I've been thinking since the start of this week, it could take some time to work through that. It could take some, and it's since last week, since the meeting, I mean, it's not a surprise, because if you paid any at all attention to the Jets since their meeting, their 4-hour meeting last Wednesday in LA with Rodgers, it's been very clear that they've been clearing the landscape to have right. Aaron Rodgers come on board. I mean, they've been restructuring. They just go out and sign Alan Lazard. It's been very clear. So it's going to take some time to work through those things. And it's not something that's just going to happen. So, you know, he's kind of putting the ball in the Packers court and saying they're haggling over the compensation, but there's work for the Jets to do too.
Yeah. Side note, good for Alan Lazard. He wanted to test the market this year. And of course it helps that Aaron Rodgers is going to the Jets and was given his name, but like that seems like a good deal for him. 4 years, $44 million, I believe it is.
It's an incredible story for a guy that was not only undrafted, but initially cut by the Packers, which is stunning because he became an important player for him. And yeah, to get 11 mil annually is that's a very solid deal for him. Some of that's probably the Aaron Rodgers, please be our quarterback tax.
But. Yeah. Yeah. That's going to get tossed on there too. And it seemed like Nathaniel Hackett being hired as the offensive coordinator for the Jets was a big draw for Rodgers and something that worked out for the Jets. It didn't work out for the Broncos last year when they hired him as a head coach, hoping to possibly lure Rodgers. Spoon, I'm going to come to you for this. Do you think that was as much of a draw as Rodgers made it seem like it was on the McAfee show? The Nathaniel Hackett part of it.
You mean for Lazard or?
No, for Nathaniel Hackett. I'm sorry. Do you think Nathaniel Hackett was as big of a draw? As he made it seem like it was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not one to look at the obvious and, you know, deny it. I think it certainly had something to do with it, and I think it was all part of Woody Johnson, the Jets owner's plan. I mean, my understanding is that Woody Johnson made Robert Saleh fire Mike LaFleur, you know, sort of as a scapegoat, but also probably thinking, yeah, maybe we can lure Rodgers with Hackett. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and I agree with Rodgers that it's unfair to Hackett because he is a good offensive mind. Turned out to be a horrible coach, but he's a good offensive mind, head coach, I should say. So I don't doubt that it was for that, partially that reason.
Yeah. But to your point as well. Yeah. Good point from Rodgers that he's worthy of a coordinator job, not just as a bring Rodgers to us job.
Yeah. I think one of the most interesting things here, when you look from their perspective, the Jets perspective, is whether or not he's going to participate in the offseason program. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's no question that having Nathaniel Hackett as the offensive coordinator helps facilitate a smoother transition. He's going to know the offense going in. But he's also, and he was very careful not to give an answer on when he was asked if he's going to do the offseason program for the Jets. Very careful not to give an answer. He's also going to be adjusting to a lot of new people. I mean, yeah, they got Alan Lazar and they got Nathaniel Hackett, but I think that'll be fascinating to see because he was very insistent on not doing that the past few years here with the Packers, including obviously last year where they were working in rookies into the offense.
With that in mind, let's look back at the Packers part of it. Let's start with the obvious question. If Aaron Rodgers is gone, who's the Packers general manager now?
Spoon.
Decisions.
Yeah,
I think it's Spoon.
But for real, do you see sort of maybe a different balance of power sort of shaking itself out now? Like, do you see maybe Matt LaFleur being more involved in these decisions, or maybe he has been and we're just, you know, focusing on the Aaron Rodgers part of it? Like, do you see any changes to roster management and the way this team is built, especially on the offensive side of the ball, now that it's going to be Jordan Love's team, Matt LaFleur's offense without Rodgers' influence? Basically, do you see any sort of changes, especially when it comes to the roster management part of this team?
Well, I don't think Rodgers had that much say in the roster. I mean, he got Randall Cobb. He might have been able to convince him to re-sign Mercedes Lewis, although I think Matt LaFleur really liked Mercedes Lewis. I don't think he had that much impact. He certainly didn't have any impact in the draft. And, I mean, mm-hmm. I've never heard him take credit for Keyshawn Nixon or Rudy Ford or, you know, guys like that. I think where his influence was greatest and will change is in the locker room, in the meeting rooms, on the field. I think you're going to start hearing stories now about his control and that guys are feeling more relaxed and, you know, don't feel the same pressure, and that Jordan Love has, you know, been just the greatest teammate ever and supports them, whether they drop the ball or don't drop the ball. I mean, I just think that's part of that is natural, but when you're dealing with a guy who's been around for that long and was that great of a player, I think his hold on some of those things, particularly in the environment that they all work in, is going to change. That's the big thing, in my opinion.
Whenever I got asked, you know, while we were at the combine or just when people text or reach out over the past few weeks and they ask, well, what do you think about Jordan Love? And I'm like, you know, there's so much about him we don't know. And that's kind of always my answer. I don't know yet. But the thing that stands out, and this may be absolutely nothing, it may just be the most mundane thing ever that I'm making a big deal out of, I don't know what he's going to be like as the leader of an NFL locker room. That's a whole different animal. You know, we've seen his footwork improve. We've seen his mechanics improve, his decision-making improve. But that's just one aspect of it. Being the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers means you have the attention, the pressure, 100-plus years of history sitting on your shoulders. How is he going to handle that? That's going to be the interesting part. But he's definitely going to be a different type of leader than Aaron Rodgers, for better or for worse. You know, it'll just kind of be a couple of years to kind of see which – if this tactic works. And that's not to say one's better than the other. They're just going to be different. But the thing that always stood out to me about Jordan Love is he has a handshake with every single guy on the offense. And again, like I said, that might be nothing. That might be a really mundane thing. But it tells me that he has some sort of connection, some sort of relationship with every guy on the offense, and it's intentional. And that we know that wasn't always Rodgers' approach. And again, that's not to say one's better than the other. It's just going to be a very, very different approach, and I think it's going to create a very different team as a result.
Well, you're going to have a quarterback now who is given the same set of rules as everyone else to an extent. I mean, quarterback's still quarterback, but Aaron Rodgers was allowed to live in his own world and to live in Aaron Rodgers' set of rules, to even in COVID times. I mean, he might be the COVID MVP, but he was given free reign to do whatever he wanted in terms of COVID, to the point where the Packers were fined for it. It was Aaron Rodgers' set of rules, and it's going to be different now, not having as much as Aaron Rodgers, his age, his advancing age, and just socially disconnecting, which is overblown. Whether you play, if you play well on the field, that doesn't matter as much. But that caused some social unattachments from his teammates, the same that it did with Brett Favre. With Jordan Love, it's going to be – I mean, he is their age. It's going to be the same set of rules. It's not going to be living in his own world. That'll be very different.
Spoon, you lived through the Favre to Rodgers transition. You were here covering the team. What does Jordan Love need to do to make this work over the next year?
Play really, really well. Don't turn the ball over.
Easy peasy.
I think it's more about what the Packers can do for him. I guess I'll put it this way. They need to make an environment where everything doesn't fall on his shoulders. So they got a strong running game. They're willing to use it. They shore up that defense. The special teams continues to get better. And they play the game a different way. They are going to play the game a different way. When you have Aaron Rodgers, they play to score 31 points every week. And now there's going to be weeks where they know their defense can maybe hold someone and they can play field position football and they don't need their quarterback to carry them. So I think they've just got to play to that and do whatever works for him and build confidence. You know, it took Rodgers all of 2008 to really get going. I mean, at the end of the year, he had some moments and then he had like a string of games where he threw a bunch of interceptions and then he kind of finished strong. I think you have to expect that from Jordan Love, that there's going to be some ups and downs. But they have to protect him and make sure that they're not putting the weight of the entire team on him.
They reworked David Bakhtiari's contract to make sure he's still here this next year. So that's a huge part of protecting him. Obviously, you know, Bakhtiari's had injuries, but when he's been on the field, he's been solid. So that can be a huge help for a young quarterback. You mentioned Rodgers having a string of games with interceptions. Spoon, I know you and I talked about this when we were coming back from the combine about Trevor Lawrence's rookie year, like leading the NFL in interceptions, and that might have been the best thing for him. So, Ryan, I want to kind of get your insight on that. Do you almost need to have a year where you let Jordan Love make mistakes, figure out what he can and can't do in the NFL?
Yeah, I think that's what it's all going to be about when it comes to whether or not Jordan Love's going to be a successful quarterback or not. I don't think anyone inside or outside the Packers has any idea if Jordan Love's going to be successful. And I don't know if they're going to know till at least midway, if not at the end of his first season, because he has to go through the crucible that every first-time starting quarterback goes through, which is he's going to make mistakes. Aaron Rodgers was not over 500 in his career until 29 games into his career. He's going to make mistakes. And can he learn from the mistakes? Can he – it's a cliche, but it's true. Can he stack successes 1 week to the next? Can he be the focal point of an opposing defense's game plan once there's ample amount of film on the field for them to study and prepare for? Huge questions that we don't know. And I think part of that, too, I mean, the two things that I'm maybe most interested to find out is who is Jordan Love? Because we don't – I mean, for 3 years now, he's been a backup behind Aaron Rodgers and has played that role very dutifully, which is stay in the corner, be quiet, don't rock the boat, prepare, be ready, but and grow and learn. That's what he's had to do, and he's done that. Now he's going to be in a spotlight. He is the not heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers, but the replacement for the Green Bay Packers. That's going to be a spotlight that he has got to handle. I think it'll be fascinating to see who develops out of that. And Matt LaFleur's offense, what does it actually look like? Because when we talk about Aaron Rodgers having his own set of rules, he would always say it's his offense and it's Matt LaFleur's offense. There's two offenses that they reached a compromise and melded together. This is going to be Matt LaFleur's offense now.
I think that's exciting.
What does it look like?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think that's what I'm interested to see too. Like, what does this offense look like without Aaron Rodgers in it? And that's going to, he's going to get a year regardless, just to kind of see if he can do it without Rodgers and change it up. To your point about Love having to go through the crucible, it kind of works out well for him this year. I mean, well, I guess it depends on your point of view. If you want him to get thrown into the fire and baptism by fire, or if you want him to steadily work up to it. But if it's the latter, I mean, his away opponents, other than division opponents, his away opponents are the Falcons, the Panthers, the Broncos, the Raiders, the Giants, the Steelers. Those are not tough places to play.
Wouldn't think so.
He's not having to play in Philadelphia again, which, you know, he did in the fourth quarter this past year. He's not having to play in Buffalo. He's not having to play in Kansas City again. He's sort of getting like it's not going to be a walk in the park. It's still the NFL. And, you know, you go to the Steelers, you're going to have to face Watt. But he's getting a little bit of an ease into it here, especially with these away opponents. And I mean, Denver's going to be interesting just because you have to learn how to navigate your body when you play there. These are not the toughest places in the NFL for him to walk into and play in his first year.
Well, and Spoon made the point. He wrote a column out of the combine. I mean, Jordan Love also has a defense. He's got a special teams. There's some framework built around him. He's got great running backs behind him. What's a rookie quarterback? I know he's not a rookie, but essentially, what's a rookie quarterback's best friend?
A running back.
Running game, right? He's got a good offensive line. There's a lot of infrastructure there for them to be able to help a young quarterback go through those growing pains. And if he goes through them and learns, he'll be a success. And if he doesn't, he'll be a failure. That's going to be the answer.
I know that y'all have a lot to get to, so I'm not going to keep you too much longer, but I do have two final questions for each of you, and either one of you can start. First question, what is your – I don't want to use the word favorite because that sounds biased. What is your – like, when you think back on Aaron Rodgers' career as the Packers quarterback, what's the moment that stands out the most, whether a game – or a play, or something he said, like, what's the one that to you is the epitome of this future Hall of Fame quarterback?
I'm going to take this one first because Spoon's got the entire repertoire to choose from, and I really want to hear his answer on this.
He can take anything, so you get first.
I mean, you would think it'd be hard because there was a lot of moments, right? Arizona double Hail Mary to Jeff Janis, that stands out. But I'll never forget the Hail Mary in Detroit and watching that ball in flight. And if you don't know Ford Field, where we sit as you know, press row, it's at the top of the stadium, and that's a tall stadium. It's indoors. And that it looked like a punt. And I'll never forget thinking it when it was basically eye level with me. I've never seen a ball like that before. And then it dropped so perfectly to Richard Rodgers. That's the best throw I've ever seen live personally. And I, as soon as it happened, I knew it's a play I'll never forget.
Yeah, that is a cool one to go back and watch too. So I can't imagine having seen it live. Spoon, what about you?
Well, mine is kind of, you know, I think you have to break it into two categories, his best and his worst. Because there's always something great and something not great. And, you know, the best performance I ever saw from him, I still think, was the Atlanta NFC Championship game. I'm sorry, divisional playoff game in 2000. It was actually January of 2011 on their way to the Super Bowl. That was one of the finest performances I've ever seen by a quarterback. And then I'll also remember the four downs, or, you know, three downs against Tampa Bay, and they couldn't get the ball into the end zone with a chance to go to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, those are like two things that'll probably be ingrained in my head when I think of Aaron Rodgers.
With that in mind, now let me ask an even more vague question. What is Aaron Rodgers' legacy with the Green Bay Packers?
Wins. I mean, keeping the franchise on top, making them contenders every single year. To me, that's the legacy, you know, making their brand, keeping their brand, you know, at the top. I think that's what he did more than anything else. Made them a lot of money too. Helped build the stadium to what it is now. All those things. The winning was number one.
All the things that Spoon just said are absolutely true. It was pretty much a football miracle to have an Aaron Rodgers follow a Brett Favre. That's just it's lightning striking twice. It's winning the lottery again. It just doesn't happen. When you look at the totality of his career, and to Spoon's point about that Tampa Bay game, and it's not the only, you know, what happened a year later? San Francisco, a game that the defense just owned, and the offense couldn't get it done inside Lambeau Field. They scored the opening drive touchdown, and that was it. Dan Marino gets so much flack in his career for never winning a Super Bowl. And he only won, what was it, one MVP for Dan Marino? And it was interesting. I was going back through some old quotes, and on the Super Bowl media that Aaron Rodgers did win, he said very clearly that an all-time great quarterback is judged on Super Bowls, on winning the big game. That's how you judge him. And then he went on and won the big game. He referred to Dan Marino in his legacy in that quote and said he still thinks that Dan Marino's an all-time great, but he never won the big game, and that's followed him. To Spoon's point, there's always two sides of the coin. Four MVPs and one Super Bowl is going to be part of the legacy, and they had ample chances, and some of the missed opportunities were completely outside of Aaron Rodgers' control. A botched onside kick. A defense that just got railroaded in Atlanta 2 years later. Some of those things he couldn't have any influence on. But there were games, big games, that were begging for an Aaron Rodgers to go and win, the way that we've seen with Patrick Mahomes going to win, the way we've seen with Tom Brady going to win. Four MVPs in one Super Bowl is definitely lopsided. And not getting that second ring is also – it's for all – and I'm not selling short. He is an all-time great. He said on Pat McAfee today, he's debatably the greatest player in Packers history. That's saying something. He's in that conversation. But not getting that second ring is going to be part of the legacy as well.
That is both great points. Y'all have been here for so much of his career, Spoon, you for all of his career, so – few have this sort of insight. So thank you for sharing it both. There's still a lot to do here before the Packers get ready for the 2023 season. Of course, the details of the trade have to be hammered out with the New York Jets. We might see some more Packers free agents signing with the Jets or with other teams. There's still a lot of questions around free agency in total for the Packers and what's going to happen with some of their players. And then, of course, as we get closer to the draft, they do have pick 15 in the first round this year, a pretty decent pick for the first round for the Packers. So much to discuss as we continue on, but just kind of wanted to hop in here today and address the immediate news of Aaron Rodgers moving on and joining the New York Jets and leaving the Green Bay Packers after 18 years. Guys, thank you for always for your time. I know this has been a long day and it's still going, so get a little bit of rest, get some coffee if you can. If you have any final thoughts, do so now. Otherwise, we will sign off.
Let's just see how this thing plays out. That's the one thing that's kind of discouraging, is that it's not over yet.
Yeah.
Do you want to put your bets in as to what the compensation will be? Like, do you want to put – what are your final guesses as to what the Packers will get from the Jets? And then we'll come back and see who's right.
I said on Twitter that I thought it would be a second-round pick, second or third-round pick this year, and a conditional pick for 2023, possibly as high as a first. So that's kind of my guess.
Yeah, the only thing I feel really confident on is that it's not going to be a first-round pick unless there's a condition tied to it. I just, with that contract, his age, I have a hard time seeing a first-round pick without it being a conditional.
Spoon, did you mean conditional for 2024?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, they would get, let's say it's a second and a third next year. So a second this year, third next year, that could be a first.
You know, I'm going to go high because we just, every time a new quarterback deal comes out, we are left aghast and thinking, really? That guy's worth all that? And I can't help but think that history will repeat itself here. So I think it'll be two picks this year, maybe a second and a third, a conditional pick next year, and maybe even a player.
I could see him throwing in a player.
Yeah, I could see a player.
Yeah. What position would you go for if you're the Packers? Who would you ask for?
Elijah Moore.
I'd ask for one of those receivers who's on his rookie contract.
Mm-hmm.
Mims or Moore.
Elijah Moore did ask for a trade from the Jets last season, so that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and then they said they're not trading him. And then he kind of came around, and I think Mims did a little bit too at the end of the year. Yeah. But, you know, they did sign Lazard.
There.
It just doesn't do them a lot of good contractually. I think they'd like to probably get rid of Corey Davis. But the Packers can't afford him. He's got a $10 million cap number.
Yeah.
And so something would have to happen with his contract. So I think they would want one of those young receivers.
I think Alan Lazard signing with the Jets helps facilitate that too. I mean, it does the Packers a favor because he's going to play. So one of those young receivers coming back, I think, is more likely.
And if they sign Cobb definitely they're going to want to get rid of one of their receivers.
Mm-hmm. And then Lazard, if they don't sign someone, then Lazard will be worth a compensatory pick next year, correct?
No, he will be no matter what.
Oh, okay. I thought if they signed an equal player, then it wiped that out.
They would, but they're not going to sign any free agents. If they traded for – you know, Corey Davis, that wouldn't count.
Okay. Good to know.
So I don't think they're going to sign any free agents of any significance this year.
It's going to be a transition year. They need to get their cap back in order during that transition and then let Jordan Love go through the growing pains and then you can gear up and start building around him.
So this is a step back year.
If you think about it, they started building for him last year
by
taking those three wide receivers, bolstering their offensive line, and then they've been building their defense. So in some ways, they've been building for Jordan Love more than they were for Aaron Rodgers. So I think he's got some pieces moving forward. You know, I don't think they're barren on offense. I think they got the ability to be, pretty productive.
And re-signing Keyshawn Nixon, that's huge. I mean, for a guy in your first year as quarterback, starting from the 40 on average is a whole lot different than starting from the 25.
It is.
That's for sure.
So huge signing there as well for the Packers. Like I said, there's still so much to discuss as the Packers get their roster together for the 2023 season and for the second time in 30 years doing so with a new quarterback. We will be there to cover it for you all. Ryan, I know you head to the owners meeting here in a week or so.
That's right. Is that coming? Wow. Boy, March is flying by.
Yeah, it's just moving right along.
Yep.
And then, Spooner, I know you're working on some stuff. Spoon will have more time to focus on the Packers now that his UM Milwaukee boys are not in March Madness, sadly.
Wait a minute. Yes, they are. They're in the CI, what is that
tournament? CIT? CIT?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the second tier NIT?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Wow. That's the lowest of the
low. Spoon is hardcore.
What channel is that on? Like True TV 2.3?
No, it's like on some streaming channel. And then if they get to the quarterfinals, I think, or semifinals, then it's on ESPN2.
Wow. It's really moving up. That would have been a fun story if they had made it, but still a good season anyways. Okay, guys, like I said, I know y'all had a long day and it's still far from over. So I'm going to let you go. Thank you as always. Thank you for listening. This has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.